Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
By the 21st minute, it was 7-0. Soon after, Archie Thompson grabbed his third and Australia's 10th. Where was the keeper?
It began with a tremendous shaking, unlike anything in living memory. Then came the water, destroying everything in its path.
As looting continued with impunity in London, for the first time, British police used these armoured Jankel trucks to clear roads in a number of areas. This was Peckham, South London.
31-0. Even the scorer lost count. And you have to say that with no away goal, America Samoa were going to find the second leg very difficult.
Never scored a goal in official competition. We win, we score. To me, this is going to be part of soccer history. Just like the 31-0 against Australia was part of history, we just made part of history. These guys did, I didn't. I'm so proud of the players.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the Greatest Games podcast on Football Ramble Daily in association with The Blizzard. My name is Marcus Speller. Opposite me is Jonathan Wilson. And with us today, it's the Indiana Jones of football journalism. It's James Montague, journalist and author of a number of great books, including 31-0, On the Road with Football's Outsiders, A World Cup Odyssey, which was named Football Book of the Year at the 2015 British Sports Book of the Year Awards. And of course, you have a brand spanking new book out this year called 13-12, Among the Ultras, Journey with the World's Most Extreme Fans. James, pleasure to have you with us.
Thank you for having me on again.
I'm so glad that you've made time for us. You know, you're a globetrotter, as we know, and as your match will attest to, but you're here in our company, and you're going to talk about this one. We go back to 2011, an Oceania pre-qualifying match for the 2014 World Cup that ended Tonga 1, American Samoa 2. Very on brand for your type of your kind of caper. A number of us would have seen the documentary about this. But James, why have you chosen this game?
Well, I mean, there is no doubt that in terms of the quality of football, this is the worst the worst game that we're probably ever going to talk about. I mean, when you watch the game back, there's even a minute. If you can find on YouTube, you can find the highlights. And when they kick off, they kind of get confused and knock into each other.
Yeah.
So it's quite kind of
I'll be honest
quality.
With you. This will be the only game, Jonathan, and I would include probably all three of us in this, but I'll only speak on my behalf, is the only game I think we'll ever do on this podcast in which I can firmly and safely say, I could have played in this game. I could have done a job.
I don't know. I remember speaking to somebody who once thought that and tried to get a game in the Latvian second division. Yeah. And it was impossible. So no matter how well we...
I appreciate what you're saying, but I still 10 years ago, I'd have backed myself.
Okay, 10 years ago. You could go in goal now. Goalkeepers are
quite
well
possibly
into their 40s.
Quite possibly.
You know.
But yeah, so I would say this is worse than Latvian second division.
But it's
I mean, I've watched Latvian first division.
I thought you might have done.
And assuming there isn't a huge gulf between... I mean, I don't know what the parachute pavement situation is there, but...
Wouldn't have thought it was.
I would say this is a lower standard than Latvian second division.
Yeah, but clearly it's not the quality of the football.
It's
the
not
reason
the quality.
Why you chose this
and
game.
The reason I chose I this not. Was because, I mean, a few years ago, you mentioned it, I wrote a book called 31-0, and I really wanted to tell the story of a World Cup qualification campaign, but through the eyes of... you know, the teams that would never make it. And I asked the question, what is it that keeps people going when they lose all the time? And if I was going to call it 31-0, I had to go and find American Samoa, because American Samoa famously loses 31-0 to Australia, world record score, in 2001. And so I make my way to Samoa for this pre-qualification tournament. And I get there and I thought I was going to land and go straight to the game, but I found out I crossed the international dateline. So I got there a day early, which was great, because then I went...
It was better than a day late.
Yeah, it was better than a day late. So you know, I turned up and you know, this incredible story unfolds in front of me. Like, I knew that American Samoa had lost 31-0, and that must have left a scar on these players. But then I went to the kind of motel where these players were, and, you know, their lives had, I wouldn't say been ruined, but it's certainly been dominated in the 10 years... since that game.
Well, the goalkeeper in particular.
Well, Nicky Salapu was...
And it's the same player, right? He plays in both games.
Yeah, Nicky Salapu is the goalkeeper in Coffs Harbour. And we can't really talk about this game in 2011 without talking about this victory, this 31-0 victory, because Nicky Salapu was the goalkeeper in that game. And you can find that full match quite easily. Mm. And he has a great first 10 minutes. It's 0-0 in the first 10 minutes, and he's pulling off save after save.
Well, just because he's shipped, it doesn't mean to say... I remember watching Villa get beat 8-0 at Chelsea once, and I think it was Brad Guzan ago, and I was like, honestly, he had a pretty good game.
Yeah, it could have been 38-0.
Well, that's how bad his teammates were.
It was, but there's another story behind that, because when you see that, I mean, obviously they changed the rules afterwards about qualification so that you had to have a pre-qualifying tournament, and it kind of reinforced a lot of people's negative stereotypes about minnows. Why should the big teams play these small teams? You know, we should separate them. It's a waste of time. But actually what happened is, because American Samoa is kind of a dependency of the United States of America, whereas Samoa...
It's about 55,000 people population.
But Samoa is an independent state. Mm. But culturally, they're virtually identical. Mm-hmm. So what they found out is just before the tournament, whilst they were all there, they found out that they all had Samoan passports. And so the entire squad basically gets told that they can't play. Mm. So they have to draft in... effectively a bunch of 15-year-olds. Yeah. The only senior player there was Nicky Salapu. Australia go in and as Australians do in any sporting arena, just complete, will destroy you, will pound you into the ground.
And take great pleasure in doing so.
And take great pleasure in doing so. And that's what they did. And they win 31-0. And there's a brilliant interview with the coach afterwards where he's kind of shell-shocked, and he says, I don't know why they wanted to score so many goals. Mm. You know, that's the only thing he said. And,
yeah, but I mean, if it's a competitive game, you play it hard, right?
Yeah, but
and if it's not a competitive game, you shouldn't be playing it.
I've spoken to quite a few Australians who say this, like, oh yeah, but we needed to run up the score, we needed to run up the goal difference. The problem is
that
there were two separate groups. So if New Zealand was in the same group, I could understand that, because there were two groups. Australia hammered everybody in their group. New Zealand hammered everyone in their group. So it actually didn't make any difference.
No, that's a flaw of the format. It's not a flaw of Australia. You're playing in a World Cup game. You go out and you play it hard. And if you're expected to be charitable to the opposition, then the tournament's a joke.
It's not, but there is...
Oh, Jonathan, you're taking hard line there.
I think there is a... There is,
do you not think?
There is no, a kind in, of... There is a kind
in,
of
a, in a friendly, yes. Yeah. But in a... Yeah, I guess if...
So what about the Italian school of thought, you know, where you sort of, when you go four or five up, then probably of yesteryear now, you just kind of ease off. Do you think that... You find that abhorrent?
I find that... I mean, I can understand easing off if you're protecting your own players and you're sort of conserving energy. I think that's fine. Mm-hmm. The Italian mentality, I think, was always, well, we'll stop at four or five, because if this happens to us, I want them to stop at four or five, which I don't think is healthy. No, I don't think you can condemn a team for playing hard in a competitive game.
Yeah, but even if you can't, I think there is a generally... I mean, we're living in an age where norms are going out the window in every field, but there is a kind of norm in... almost in professional football, that it is a bit unseemly to be punching down quite so hard 31 times.
I think it's a bit... Yeah.
I think it's I think it's awful for everybody concerned. And that's why I think that format was a nonsense.
Yeah. But I mean, one person who did agree with me, I had a lunch. I sound like a twat saying this, but I had a lunch with Gordon Ramsay and Dick Advocaat in Dubai. It was. We'd arranged it. So
Rangers legend and Dick Advocaat.
Although it turns out he never played for Rangers later, didn't it? True. But we didn't know that then. So we'd arranged it so that it's kind of Dick Advocaat being interviewed by Ramsay at his restaurant in Dubai, and we sit there.
And what are you doing there?
Well, because I was working at Time Out Dubai, so I was actually interviewing him.
Okay.
And Advocaat had been hired as the UAE national team coach, but they'd already been eliminated from, I think, World Cup qualification and Asian Cup qualification. Right. So he literally had nothing to do until the Gulf Cup came around in like 18 months' time. And so when he got the phone call, he was like, "Yes,
yeah."
And so we meet him. He's there early, and we have lunch. And they're going through all these Rangers stories, and then that's when he tells me the story about how I think it was Craig Moore and Tony Vidmar.
Mm.
I think Craig Moore scores 4 against Tonga because in the game before they beat Tonga 22-0, which was the previous record. And he says that when they came back, he was so appalled by the fact that they scored 31 goals that he dropped Moore and Vidmar as punishment for doing that.
Flipping heck.
And he's very pleased about that. But I mean, I will put caveat there.
Archie Thompson stayed in the team, having scored 19. Was it he got or whatever it was?
Did he score? No, there was one player scored 9. Who was it?
That was Archie Thompson.
Was it Archie Thompson? Yeah, it was Archie Thompson.
Oh,
yeah.
I'm just thinking. But John Aloisi.
He wasn't playing for Rangers at the time, was he?
No,
he wasn't. No.
So he dropped these two players, and I would say that because I mentioned this on Twitter a couple of back last year, and Craig Moore replied to me. Which is the wonder of social media. And he said, "Oh, no, I was injured." You know, so he denies that he was dropped. But I mean, Advocaat was absolutely adamant that he dropped the players based on this. And it was great. It was a great lunch. And then after we had that lunch, Advocaat went to his car, drove to the airport, left his car at the airport and fled the country.
Well, there's a lot of cars in that situation. But we're getting off of American Samoa themselves.
So why did he flee the country? Can't leave it there.
Because we'd had this... he'd been offered the South Korea job, I think.
So it wasn't like fleeing justice or...
No, he wasn't fleeing justice, but he was like...
Or injustice.
No, but it's very difficult to leave Dubai.
Yeah.
Very difficult. Like, I don't know what it's like now, but there was a whole car park of cars at the airport where a lot of even people, you know, a friend of mine, he didn't do it, but he would know people that wanted to get back to Britain. And it was so hard to almost like unpick yourself from the Dubai system.
If you had any debt, it's a criminal matter to owe money, basically.
Yeah.
So people would just leave their cars at the airport, leave the keys in ignition.
But if you had a single ticket at the airport, they wouldn't let you go.
No.
So you'd always have to buy a return. But, I'll be back in a bit.
But Advocaat was... And then we'd run the interview and he'd fled the... fled the country because I felt that the tipping point for him taking the job might have been that interview because he was kind of a broken man during it. So because like Gordon Ramsay asked him, so what you got next, World Cup qualifiers? Like, no. And so he went and then he actually phoned me up because we'd run it on the front page of the magazine. And I was just... Like he's not the coach anymore, and it was a big scandal in the UAE. And he phoned me up and apologised.
Did he?
Yeah, that's quite nice of him.
I think there's a piece there to be made in search of Dick's car.
Yeah,
find it. Well, of course, one of his fellow countrymen had taken a surprise job elsewhere, which was, of course, we talk about Thomas Rongan, who took the job as American Samoa coach.
Yeah.
Now he'd been he was a player in MLS, of course.
He was. I mean, he came through at Ajax as a youth player and never. I don't think he even made a first team appearance, but went to.
He was DC United. Did he play or manage?
It was in New York. I think it was at the Cosmos.
Okay.
He played in the late 70s and he was a teammate of Cruyff briefly and was a roommate of his or stayed at his house. He never really made it as a player, but he stayed in the US, married an American woman. And when you hear him speak, he has a very strong, gruff American accent. But then he gets into coaching and he becomes coach of the US under 20s team.
Did he win? He won the MLS Cup with DC United in 1990.
No, that was Bob Bradley.
Oh, that was Bob Bradley.
Easy mistake to make.
Indeed,
But that was his successful kind of you know, he was taking the under 20 team to the World Cups.
Yeah, so
bringing through a lot of young players. I mean, he was really highly sought of. Mm. And then he was kind of out of work, but still attached to the federation. And they basically lent him to American Samoa for this, you know, for this short term job. See what you can do. See if you can put any fires out. And when I had arrived, he'd really been only in charge of the team for a couple of weeks. Uh-huh. And he turned, when I interviewed him, he said, you know, I've never seen a lower football IQ in my life.
Incredible.
And the people were, the diet was terrible. You know, so he really turned up to a lot of players. Not only were they kind of unfit, didn't really have any coaching, tactics coaching or anything like that. You know, they also had these huge scars from defeat. One of them being Nicky Salapu, who was still in the squad, had probably conceded over 200 goals since then. There was, I mean, when I spoke to him, this guy was like, he had a weight on his shoulders. I mean, he was telling me how he worked in the Safeways in Seattle, and like all his colleagues would take the piss out of him. Mm. His kids would have the piss taken out of them at school.
It's mad.
And
just to stop any piss taking, Rongan did win the US Open Cup with DC United.
Oh, did he really?
Did he?
Oh, thank you very much for checking.
Did he?
but basically, Rongan, though, that my point was, which you made without saying that fact, is he's got a bit of pedigree.
Yeah.
He's not some guy who, you know, I think on a Ramble Meets Luke interviewed Watson, who went and did up
Paul Watson,
yeah, up Pompeii.
Up Pompeii, yeah.
Yeah, who you know, it's not one of those stories where it's a kind of a European fancies he's done a bit of coaching.
Well, he won the, I mean, I was about to say that as if I knew this. I'm reading it on Wikipedia. he won the MLS regular season with Tampa Bay Mutiny and was named MLS Coach of the Year. Even before his glory with DC.
So in the US?
I feel you've underestimated the man, Jones.
I thought he did a fantastic job. I met him and it was very clear from meeting him that he was a professional.
He's proper a proper footballing man, which is usually comes at the end of a sentence when that man has been derided or scandal has broken. Mm. But that's not the case with Rongan, as far as I'm aware. But he is a footballing guy. Yeah. And he would have been one of those Europeans who was in the US, because at the time, footballing culture in the US was emerging. I mean, obviously they've got the facilities, you know, they've got the desire and the energy, but they just needed a bit more of the kind of culture, if you like. Mm. So he goes from there to American Samoa, where he thinks, flipping heck, you know, you're trying to get a bit more, I suppose, traditional, suppose European football culture in the States, and he goes to American Samoa, and it's like,
well, it's a chance to. I mean, the way he explained it to me was, it like, okay, it's a couple of weeks, and it's a chance to, you know, coach a senior team at a World Cup. I mean, you know, why not go to a warm place, give it a go? Uh-huh. If it doesn't work out, then you come home. But then he becomes incredibly emotionally attached to the players that he meets. And he has an almost religious awakening as he's doing this. Mm. And what's really interesting is that he brings those players together. The big thing he does is work with their fitness. And you see a lot of this in Next Goal Wins, the documentary that was made about this.
Yeah.
But also, you know, psychologically, and these players had never had anybody, because he's a tough talking coach. I mean, he's you know, on people's backs, and they just weren't used to it. It was a complete culture shock, and it almost all falls apart until, you know, the players start realising that they are improving.
Mm, indeed. All right, well, let's have a quick break, and then we'll talk more about Rongan and his coaching methods and the match itself. So see you in a moment, everybody.
A KO American Samoa, conceded by number 13.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction, and free shipping, and that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast, and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/acast.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas, big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
Jackmate's Happy Hour is back for a brand new season. It's the podcast where we talk to some of the most exciting people in the world, from Ricky Gervais.
In some ways, fame makes you a better person. You know, it's like, I don't believe in God. I don't believe in God's watching me, but I know someone with
everyone else is.
To undercover police officers.
Can you see the fading scar there, gentlemen?
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah.
That's where I was stabbed in the neck by a drug dealer once.
Or we just talk about whatever's making us laugh right now.
When you think back to school kid banter, like, it's well funny because of how immature it is. We had this teacher called Mr. McGibbon, and he had this big cushion that he was teaching us how to rugby tackle on. He just ran up to it, rugby tackled it, but landed on top of it, and one of the kids shouted, "It's not your wife, sir."
That is funny.
Listen to Jack Mate's Happy Hour on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your pods.
Jack Mate's Happy Hour is a Stakhanov production.
Welcome back to Greatest Games on Football Ramble Day in association with the Blizzard. So, yes, James Rongan. You think about the style of coaching. I mean, it's all different styles of coaching, but in the US, you know, having sampled a teensy tiny bit, you know, just from experience and so on, it is often sort of quite hard. It's there's an element of the drill sergeant about certain coaches and so on and so forth, and that's just not cutting the mustard in American sport, because he really had to be almost like a counsellor and show a lot of emotional intelligence as well as being a football coach to those players.
When he comes across Nicky Salapu, guy, he says, got demons.
Yes.
Demons. And, you know, this is a guy who's playing Xbox at home and would set up Samoa versus Australia and take out the other control pad and score 50 goals against Australia. And he said that to me it's a funny thing. I'm like, maybe you should see somebody about that. That's not healthy.
Yeah.
And so they really had these kind of emotional scars and this weight. And I remember the night before this game, and I went and sort of met the players and, mm-hmm. and spoke to Rongan again. And that's where I met Jaya Salua. That's where I discovered that they also had a transgender player.
Now, this is fascinating.
Because in Polynesian culture, they have this thing called the fafafina, this kind of third sex within society.
Which is widely accepted in Polynesian
which
culture.
Which is widely accepted. It's kind of a difficult, kind of odd situation, because homosexuality is illegal in Samoa,
mm-hmm.
But the fafafina are accepted.
Right.
So it's kind of one way of... It's kind of accepting kind of homosexuality, but then they could have pushed people into this kind of third sex. But
okay.
I met Jaya. I mean, at first I thought she was one of the wives of the players, because mm-hmm. She's a woman.
Yeah.
And then Rongan turns around and said, I mean, basically I've got a woman's thing starting at centre back tomorrow. And then that's how I discovered that something called the fafafina existed.
Right.
And she was very gracious, very friendly.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember the next day when the game starts at the JS Blatter Stadium in Apia, and there's about 20-30 people in the crowd, and she starts at centre back,
uh-huh.
and this game begins, and the first goal that I think American Samoa ever score competitively, and she gets the assist. She cuts right
right
through the middle. I mean,
uh-huh.
it's a goalkeeping error effectively,
uh-huh.
but Raminot scores the first goal.
I mean, a goalkeeper now, effectively, it is an atrocious goalkeeper.
Okay.
How can you say, what a rasping drive it was, John.
What I would say is, and look, my knowledge of this is limited to what little I've watched on YouTube in the last week. It is very noticeable that American Samoa are playing some kind of coordinated passing football and Tonga are not.
Yes.
Oh, it's absolutely... I mean,
so you can see that they've been properly coached. The shape is to an extent there. Mm-hmm. The sort of the way that as soon as a player gets the ball, you know, their first sort of reaction is you're already sort of half turned to then play the pass. You can see that the passing has been drilled. Yeah, they look like...
They look like a machine.
Well, they look like a not particularly good version of a proper side, whereas Tonga just look a mess.
Yeah, Tonga was coached by this very young Australian guy who's probably a little bit out of his depth. But the interesting thing about Rongan is that when you saw him on the side of the pitch, he was literally telling people what to do on the ball, reminding them what to do on the ball.
Yeah.
So when the ball went to Nicky Slapu, he was shouting on him to dive on the ball, count, and then so he would literally pick up the ball and he'd stand there counting and then hit the ball. It was literally like teaching the absolute basics.
He had to micromanage them.
Yeah, actually, absolutely. He was like pulling the strings everywhere. Yeah. And, I mean, it worked because he's a good coach and they followed exactly what he did. And then the second goal happened.
Well, the first goal, I mean... They had hit the angle of post and bar, the very good free kick before this.
Very good free
kick. And it's a real shame that's not the first goal, because that would have actually been a really good goal, as opposed to a bit of a punt from about 40 yards, which bounces up in the keeper.
A 40-yarder is still a 40-yarder.
It's a 40-yarder, but I think it might have been going like off target as well. So I'm not sure you can say that. Somehow kind of chops it with his hand and goes behind it.
Mm.
So it is 1-0, and they're all celebrating, and it's amazing because they've never really celebrated before. So when you see it, like everybody's celebrating crazily on their own because they don't really know how to celebrate.
Well, it's so interesting you say that because there was something odd about it, and you basically just summed it up for me there. When you watch this, you think, oh yeah, this is such an unnatural moment, I suppose, for them.
Yeah,
because you know they scored. You know, what was the ratio? So they'd lost 30 international games in a row. And they'd been outscored 229-12. So they had scored 12 goals, but I can imagine those 12 goals probably didn't mean that much.
No, I think a lot of them were in non-competitive fixtures as well.
Exactly. But so you're in your competitive fixture to go 1-0 up, where this means something.
Oh, the first time they'd ever been in a lead.
Yeah.
And so, but, you know, to their credit, I mean, I was there when they gave this half-time talk, because they did have a dressing room, but it was very small. So we did the half-time talk on the... And you know, as a journalist, it's quite rare to get access to the kind of dressing room and hear what's going on. And it was quite, you know, you had a tear in your eyes. It was really motivational stuff.
Did you do it on the pitch?
He did it on the side of the pitch.
Oh, okay, sort of Phil Brown-esque.
Yeah. And, so, you know, and then the second half begins, and there's a Shalom Luani scores the second goal, which is, you know, ball goes over the top and he kind of pokes it past the goalkeeper, who absolutely wipes him out. I mean, I thought he was unconscious when it happened.
Oh, yeah, it was a bit of the Schumacher style.
It was a bit of a Schumacher style, you know, and he's out and he's tuned. And it's really interesting because...
But yeah, didn't he end up playing in NFL or something?
Shalom Luani, right, is this like... I met him, he was 16 years old, right? And he was like a little slip of a lad.
Mm.
And next time I see him, I see a picture of him. His neck is wider than his head somehow.
Yeah,
I'm not sure if it's an optical illusion. But he gets drafted by the Oakland Raiders. And he's like a defensive end or something for the Raiders. And now he's at the Houston
Texans. He's Houston a safety, apparently.
I don't know.
I don't know anything about NFL, but...
Yeah, but that's it. I think he's joint top scorer in the history of American Samoa. And also... but there's a long history of American Samoans joining the US military and also playing in NFL. So it's not that surprising. But
they're big-boned people, shall we say.
Well, you know, they have certain attributes. And and he scores this goal. And then you're thinking, will Nicky Salapu get a clean sheet?
Yeah.
And that's what... And you're willing this on. But then Tonga score a goal quite late in the game.
2 minutes to go,
But the...
Which is actually a very nice back post header.
It was a nice back post header. I mean, Nicky should have done better with that. But then...
Did you tell him that?
I didn't say that. Because what happens next is that Tonga almost equalise.
Yeah.
And Jaya Salua kind of clears it off the line.
Yeah, that's right.
And then the whistle gets blown. Yeah. And I have never... And this is...
That is a great clearance as well.
It is a great clearance. But this is why I chose this game. Because, you know, I love football and I watch a lot of good games. I watch a lot of terrible games as well. But for me, you know, I mean, you'll miss the tactics. You know, but for me, the emotion is the...
I think I've moved on from that.
I think you moved on from that. Okay. But, you know, I mean, you could appreciate it as well.
Sure,
the emotion of the game and the drama of a moment like that, you know, means you can put that up against a game that is, you know, technically superb.
Yeah.
And to me, you can put those on a similar level. And that moment when they won their first ever game and, Niki Salapu is hysterical, mm-hmm. crying. Mm-hmm. They're all crying. I get a bit emotional even thinking about what that moment was like.
Yeah.
And Rongen was just beside himself. But all those players were just, you know, there was a mania because, like, what do we do? What do we do? And they were all crying and there was tears. And then they do this, they have like a haka, mm-hmm. Sivu Tau, they call it, in the Samoan culture. And they kind of all line up and they've never had to do it before because they've never won.
All right.
And they get into a line and they do this kind of like Samoan war dance, like in front of me. I'm like taking a picture of it. It seems like I was the only person there.
Yeah.
And it was just, I mean, it was wonderful. And it's captured in Nick's Goal Wins perfectly.
It is. And that, I mean, that documentary is well worth seeing, of course. But you're right. That is the beauty of football, because the scenes of celebration, I mean, the game itself, how many people are watching? I mean, it's probably just you, James, and a couple of other punters.
Was it just sort of in a sports centre or something?
No, it was the JS Blatter, the JS Blatter Stadium Complex, I think it's called. So it's a football pitch that has a tiny stand next to it with some dressing rooms. And that's it. And it's like in the middle of a jungle, basically.
But that's what I mean. Like, you know, it wouldn't be that outrageous to see some bloke walking his dog in the background.
No.
Do you know what I mean?
No.
That's the kind of level. This is as grassroots as it's ever going to get on one of these podcasts, you know. And
they've
got
to clear off a pitch because half an hour after this game finishes, the next qualifier happens, right?
Because
all the qualifiers are played on
the same pitch. Yeah, they're all played on the same pitch.
But if you were, I don't know, you were there on holiday or you're sort of travelling through or whatever and you saw this game, you would have no idea. And then if you saw the scenes of celebration, you'd think, blimey, they seem quite happy with themselves. But that's it with football. The scenes of celebration, you can, you know, make parallels with them with a side winning the World Cup, for crying out loud. You know, the way that some players, they hit the ground, they drop to their knees, they celebrate. You've just got 80,000 people around them and the cameras and the glitz and the glamour and the quality players. Whereas this is exactly the same. And that's the beauty of it. Those scenes of celebration, no wonder, you know, prompts a bit of emotion in you.
It's exactly that. It was, to them, it was the World Cup. You know, it was, they never thought they would ever achieve a victory, mm-hmm. ever.
Yeah.
And they were the worst team in the world. Uh-huh. And they had all been ritually humiliated because of it. And this was a beautiful emotional moment, but also a psychological lifting of this great dark cloud. And for me, what was also one of the most interesting things is then what happens next. They kind of get belief. You know, they go into the next game against the Cook Islands. And is it Winton... Winton
Roofer,
the New Zealand. His brother is coach of the Cook Islands, but he seems to have alienated everybody during the first couple of days of him taking the job. So they sack him before the game starts, pitch side, right? So he's standing there, he's not coach anymore. His assistant comes in and he's taking charge of the game. And American Samoa, it's like watching Brazil all of a sudden. You know, they completely dominate the match, mm-hmm. But it ends up in a 1-1 draw. And Rongen is furious because he knows if they've win that game, they're virtually assured a trip to the next round, which is, that's when they meet the big boys of
New Zealand
in the group stage.
Yeah.
And he's furious. And I remember Niki Salapu saying, can we do the haka now? And Niki, no, you can't do the goddamn haka because you didn't win. You know, and he's furious because he just thought that, you know, and he kind of gives him this kind of shakedown and he's like really disappointed. And he's like, I never thought we'd even draw a game, let alone win.
Yeah.
Because if they had won that, they'd have had 6 points, and then Samoa would have had 4 points, and they're playing Samoa last. So they just needed a draw.
They would have needed a draw. So, but it came down to the last game, the Samoan derby. The coach of Samoa was the guy who was the coach of American Samoa for the 31-0 defeat as well. So that added a little bit of spice to it. And this game, and it almost doesn't happen because there's a torrential downpour just before the game. And it's like, it looks like the game isn't going to take place because there's no way they can. They've got a tractor on. They're trying to drag the water off. But then it goes ahead and Rongen's, again, he's kind of controlling everything on the pitch. And he's got this plan that he's going to bring on a striker on like 70, 80 minutes if it's still 0-0 and they're going to go for it. So they're going to contain Samoa. Because even though Samoa were very low ranked, they were much, much a better team, but they hadn't played an international game or official international game, something like 3 years. So they'd fallen down the rankings. And
Samoa had won their first game 3-2. So they had the same goal difference going into the game, but Samoa had scored more goals.
So they had to, basically,
they had to win. So American Samoa had to win.
They had to win. So it was 0-0. It's about 75 minutes gone, or about, I can't remember. But then, and in Next Goal Wins, they do this as a slow mo. But it was, whilst I was watching it, I felt it was a slow mo because I was in the perfect angle with the striker. He goes through on goal, and he clips the ball past the Samoa goalkeeper. And it's from where I'm standing, it's in. Like I can see it bobbling into the goal, and then it just bobbles out and it hits the post and bounces out.
Yeah.
And that would have been.
Oh, it was gutting.
I mean, it was gutting. Also, it would have really screwed up all our plans because then we'd have had to somehow get to the come back to go to the next round. But you know, we all really wanted them to win and go through to the next round. And then Samoa went up the other end and scored.
Yeah,
89th minute winner.
So all these games are played. Should we say they played between the 22nd and 26th of November?
Yeah, pack them in.
So yeah, Jason Mourinho moaning about playing two games in 4 days.
That's how fit Rongan got them. You know, three games. You know. And so yeah, and then afterwards it was like this Hollywood moment where then the rain started. It was absolutely pissing it down like a monsoon. Everybody's in tears, and then Rongan lets them do their haka, lets them do the Civitale one last time as he gives this kind of emotional team talk about what it means to him to have been there through this moment. And it was just such a beautiful moment. And we're all really sad, but you know, ultimately that game changes everybody's lives who are part of it. You know?
But that sums up football better because the glory in victory and in loss as well.
Mm.
It, in those three games, it kind of encapsulates all the emotions that a lot of people wrap up in football.
It really was. And then, you know, of course the film comes out and Jaya is made into something of a star because of it. And Nicky becomes something of a star as well.
And he exercises his demons, surely.
Yeah, he's completely, you know, he tells me afterwards, like, I can go back, I can look my son in the eyes, you know, these kind of things. And
to have the documentary made as well, where a wider audience sees it
and
knows the story and actually sees that guy and thinks, yeah, you're the guy who was in the team that won there.
Exactly. And everybody loves an underdog. And, you know, I would go to screenings of the movie and people were cheering on the team in the cinema. You know, when they scored, there was a round of applause. And that's a very rare thing. And I mean, we were talking about this earlier, but, you know, it's such an amazing story. And I always thought, oh, this is like a Hollywood movie, being in a Hollywood movie. But they are actually now making a Hollywood movie of it. So
who's playing you?
I'm not in it, I don't think.
Dear.
I saw that, I think...
maybe that's a spin-off.
Yeah, maybe, yeah. I thought there might be because I did a story, I wrote about it for the New York Times. And I remember Rongan used that on a projector in the room as a team talk for the second game. So I thought maybe I might somehow get into the film that way. But no. No. They haven't, because they'd have to ask me for my life rights, I think, for this
would
kind
they?
Of thing. Yeah. So I've
no one's, not then.
No one, so I've been cut out of this this film. But they are making it. I mean, I'd heard a couple of years ago that they were thinking of doing it with The Rock playing Thomas Rongan.
Really?
Yeah. Which would be brilliant.
Wasn't there an article that Michael Fassbender was involved?
So they filmed it. Michael Fassbender is Thomas Rongan, and it is Taiki Waititi, the guy who just wrote Jojo Rabbit, won the Oscar for it. He's directed it, and it's coming out later this year.
God, I tell you what,
yeah,
that's not too shabby at all.
Not too shabby. So, but unfortunately, I mean, I saw that, was it Rhys Darby, the Australian comic? I saw that he'd been kind of signed up for the film. I thought
is that you?
You know, he's got better hair than me, but. Slightly similar colour, maybe that's me.
I think that was the sticking point, wasn't it? They had everything to do, but they just couldn't settle who would play James Montague.
Yeah, who would, yeah. Unfortunately, Rutger Hauer is no longer with us. So,
that's
I mean,
a great shame. You know. It really is a great shame. But so what was then, so the sort of the legacy, the aftermath, if you like? I mean, 4 years later, they beat Tonga in a pre-qualifier. This was
the same stage.
I
mean,
very much Tonga's bogey team. By
the really, well, it was quite sad actually because. When I finished writing 31-0, I then kind of phoned up everybody because I like to do at the end of the book is to go back to the people that I've met and find out what's happened since I first met them. And it was quite sad because Jaya's life had kind of been almost ruined in the immediate aftermath because she went back to university in Hawaii and found out that she'd been kicked off her course because they didn't get the message that she was playing in an international World Cup qualifier somewhere. And so she was kicked off her course and then she ended up getting a job as a security guard in Hawaii. And you know, we were talking and she was thinking, well, I'm going to try to get back to university. But the one thing she talked about, completing her transition, to being a woman, which would involve quite a lengthy and powerful hormone process, change. And so, but once you do that, you can't play anymore. So, but she was going to delay that so that she could play in the 2018 World Cup qualifiers. But they didn't pick her. She went for the trials, but they didn't pick her. So it was quite sad. But then the film came out, and obviously she's, you know, now FIFA recognised her as the first transgender player, and so she went back to university. They let her back in. So it's all okay. But yeah, they go to 2018 qualifiers, and again they get very close. Larry Minow, who was the coach at the beginning of Next Goal Wins, the American kind of understudy to Rongen, he takes control of the team, and they almost do it. They basically miss out by one goal. If they'd beaten Cook Island in the last game by 3-0, they'd be through. But
it's a big ask for them to score three goals in a game.
It is a big ask, but
they were very close to doing.
I'm hoping to go. I think it's in September. Coronavirus permitted, they will have another of these pre-qualifying tournaments for 2022 coming up in September this year. So I'm thinking of going and seeing.
How about that?
I mean, you never know.
You should do an organised tour.
Nicky Salapu comes back for the game, you know. Maybe I can offer your services. Do you have any Samoan heritage?
It's unlikely. I mean, and I'm a bit older these days, so, you know.
Talent, you know, class is permanent.
Realistically, I think I'm more of a bench warmer for them now. Hey, when he wanted a striker in the last sort of 20 minutes, that was me.
That was you.
That was my...
And they might need a good tactician, so, you know.
Tell you what.
Offer your services.
I mean, yes, please do. See what they're offering.
Room and board. Room and board and nothing else.
Indeed. Well, James, it's been fascinating and a pleasure, as always, to be in your company and unpacking this story with you. Nice one, mate. For more stories like that, do go to theblizzard.co.uk. But we look forward to where your travels take you next, James, and keeping in touch with you and seeing, what articles and what your Twitter feed is saying and so on and so forth. So thank you very much indeed. Thank you, Jonathan. A pleasure as always. That's been Greatest Games on Football Ramble Daily in association with The Blizzard. We'll see you next week.
Was a Stakhanov production.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High-quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more, with Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to Quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. If you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. Use the Stamps.com mobile app to mail everything you need to keep your business running with up to 89% off USPS and UPS. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Use code PROGRAM for a special offer. That's Stamps.com, code PROGRAM.